The following is a special presentation of 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and now at 95.5 FM.
Welcome to tonight's political forum on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and now at 95.5 FM.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to today's WFIN Candidate Forum, featuring the two candidates running for the Democratic nomination in the 83rd District, the Ohio House of Representatives. Before we get into that, I do need to make an announcement our candidate forum. We are told that tonight's Riverside Civic Concert Series has been canceled for this evening because of the extreme heat. We just received that word, so we wanted to make sure that we pass that along. The Riverside Civic Concert Series featuring Pantasia tonight, that was scheduled for 7 o'clock, has been canceled because of the extreme heat and the threat of severe weather. One of the two women you are going to hear from this afternoon will be on the ballot in November for the seat currently held by John Cross, who is unopposed in the Republican primary. I'm Chris Oakes, and before we begin the question and answer portion of today's forum, I'd like to first take a few moments and have the candidates introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about their background and why they are seeking their party's nomination. And first, Melissa Kritzel.
Hi. I'm Melissa. Thank you for having me, WFIN, and this forum today. My name is Melissa Kritzel, and I'm honored to be running for Ohio's 83rd state representative. Several life challenges have given me the strength that allows me to sit in front of you today. From growing up poor without running water to beating cancer at the age of 18, and I have formed a tough skin and strong political stance. The virtues that guide my campaign are compassion, integrity, commitment. I've worked on some inspiring campaigns from Hillary Clinton to Senator Sherrod Brown and was personally invited to work on Senator Elizabeth Warren's personal presidential campaign. Today I'm an advocate leader with Ovarian Cancer Research Alliance, and I will bring much-needed representation to the 83rd District. Ohio's Democratic voice has been dismissed for far too long, and I will follow through on my word and practice honest and smart politics when representing our great state. Let's bring compassion, integrity, and commitment back to Ohio.
And secondly, we'll introduce Claire Osborne. Claire?
Yes, thank you so much. My name is Claire Osborne. One of my favorite memories growing up was when I sat in my high school cafeteria about ready to take my ACTs. And my dad, he actually sat a couple rows behind me as he was about to take his. The automotive factory in my hometown closed its doors, and my dad had a choice to make. And so he chose to do things differently than he had before. So I would spend my Fridays after school going to the college campus to pick him up because he had worked third shift and went straight to work or straight to school and would be too tired to safely drive home. My parents every day showed me the definition of perseverance. I really value honesty, transparency, and vulnerability. So I'm going to take a moment to be honest and vulnerable with all of the listeners. In my journey to become somebody who is permanently passionate about serving my community, I have navigated a substance use disorder and incarceration like so many other Ohioans have, and I'm truly grateful to be in long-term recovery today. I got to this moment with a supportive family, a lot of hard work, and even more luck, but I don't think Ohioans should have to rely on luck. Today, I'm a licensed social worker with my master's in community social work, so I know firsthand how poor policy decisions made at state and local levels affect a community and the people who make up that community's well-being. I know that Ohioans are resilient. We know how to recover what has been lost, reimagine what could be, and rebuild an Ohio where we can all thrive. My story and my family's story is not unique. It's truly the same story of persistence that so many Ohioans have. It is past time that voices like ours are heard. I'm running for Ohio House because voices like ours matter, and we need representation that can turn our stories of survival into story of triumph. So I'm running because I believe that together our communities can thrive.
Welcome to both of you. We're going to make this a little less formal than perhaps our forums have been structured in the past. I'd like to encourage a dialogue, obviously not a debate, but a dialogue about some of the issues of particular interest to the 83rd District, primarily but not exclusively as they relate to Hancock County. Most of the questions, which neither candidate has seen in advance, will be directed generally to both of you. We'll allow 2 minutes for responses. Follow-up questions or further discussion between the candidates will be allotted 1 minute. Again, however, I want to stress that I'm aiming to have more of a free-flowing discussion. This is not an exam, so if you want to circle back to a topic or bring up a relevant subject that I haven't asked about, feel free to do so, and we'll explore those topics as well. So with that, and we've already pretty much done opening remarks, I want to start, as I just said, we're going to make most of these questions directed to both of you generally, but I want to start with specific questions for each of you. Melissa Kritzel, you recently ran for county commissioner. What did you learn from that campaign that makes you a better candidate in this race?
I learned how to, you know, meet with the people and learn how their concerns. I've learned how it'll be help me make a better candidate and run for office and help me with this race.
And Claire, you are seeking elected office for the first time, I believe,
yes.
Correct?
That's correct.
Generally, when an average citizen, not a politician, gets into any race, be it school board, city council, county commissioner, or in this case, state representative, it's usually because they are dissatisfied with the way a particular issue is being dealt with it by that particular body of government. What is that issue for you?
Yeah, so I'm so glad that you asked that, because that's what really started me deciding to run for office was when, I believe it was last year when the State House was working on the budget, and they were going to be changing how mental health boards worked. And so mental health boards were required to have people with lived experience on those boards. So somebody who is actively seeking treatment, somebody who has in the past, and family members of people who have sought treatment. And the Ohio House was looking to change that, to get rid of those requirements, to allow county commissioners to make these boards smaller so they didn't have to have as much people, and therefore getting rid of a lot of really valuable voice in how we navigate mental health care in our communities. One of such people who supported that change was Representative John Cross. And I truly believe that the people who are most affected by an issue should have a voice in that issue. So when our community is looking to give mental health funds to different agencies and organizations, the people who should have a voice at that table are the people who receive services. So that's really why I'm running.
You brought up the budget, so I'm going to go right to a couple of questions with respect to the budget. Next year, state lawmakers will take up the task of creating Ohio's next two-year operating budget. It is during this process that many long-standing issues such as state income tax rates and brackets, tax incentives for business investment, school funding, and more tend to get reignited during those debates. How much thought have you given to what your priorities would be? And given the fact that the state budget is constitutionally required to be balanced, what would you be willing to cut in order to fund your priorities? And we'll start with Melissa.
I honestly don't know what I'd be willing to cut, because there are so many vital services that need funding, especially our schools that are underfunded as they are, and teachers need their pay raises.
So would you say that school funding would be a priority then for you?
Yes.
And Claire, for you?
So I think that school funding does need to be a priority in the future budget. We need to ensure that we have strong public education, because that brings us to a strong workforce. The future of our communities depend on that public education being good for all students, And it's oftentimes a big employer in the community for so many people. A lot of my mom's a public school teacher at Riverdale, and you know, I think I've grown up hearing about school funding issues. So some of the things that I would be, I don't necessarily know if it's willing to cut, but I do know that the state of Ohio, I believe it went from 5 to 4 tax brackets, where the top tax bracket was cut. So the people in our communities have the most money got a tax cut. A couple years ago. I have not seen my taxes go down. I am a social worker, so I do not make a whole lot of money. And so I would look into ensuring that the people in our community who can't afford the burden of these taxes don't have to continue to bear that burden alone. I strongly believe that everybody should be paying their fair share. And I also know that we've had some reckless spending in our state house, specifically when it comes to HB 6, where we bailed out nuclear and coal plants, some of which were not even in our state. And I think we need to make sure that we're taking care of the people in our community before we are bailing out failed companies.
A number of bills in the state legislature currently in this past term address hot-button and very divisive issues of the day, from having to do with abortion in the wake of the reversal of Roe v. Wade, to racial and ethnic diversity in education, to LGBTQ plus rights, to firearms measures. These various pieces of legislation are all at different stages in the process. Some have been introduced and have yet to see any action. Some have already been passed and signed by the governor. What one or ones do you have the most concern with and why? Thinking back to all of the legislation that's been passed or proposed over the past year in the state legislature, what jumps out at you as an area of concern or something that perhaps is long overdue and why? And for this one, we'll start with Claire.
Yeah. So while it's hard to choose just one, I think when we look at LGBTQ issues in this community, I work with youth every single day who fall somewhere on this spectrum. And I see the harm that is done. I believe it's 1 in 4 LGBTQ youth will attempt suicide in their lifetime. Many of them end up with substance use disorders, chronic mental health issues, and these stem to how they were treated as young people in the community, as young people in their homes. And then it becomes a problem for everybody when they become 18. They can't maybe hold down jobs because of the mental health issues. They can't be good stewards of the community because the community has shunned them. I work every day with youth who have families who are all over the political spectrum. So one of them, you know, is a transgender youth who has a very conservative family, who really just wanted their child to be alive. And so their child was able to get hormonal care that was between them, the doctor, and the family. And I do not think that we should be trying to take that away. And I see the whole spectrum of it where I work. So I see youth who are maybe not quite certain where they are, right? But those are not the youth that are seeking out the medications and things like that. It's really the ones who are sure. So that one to me is the most disturbing all the time because I have to see the effects of it every day. I have to see the fear in these young people as they're afraid that Ohio is not the place for them, as they don't belong here. And then that, of course, will bring issues when we have young people leaving the state. So those are all of these issues intersect with each other. So thank you.
Melissa, for you, what jumps out at you with respect to some of these hot-button issues that have been brought up in the legislature over the past year?
There's too many. I would say that there's the health care and abortion issues, and that's a hot topic for me. I mean, that's a woman's right to choose, and it's a health care issue, and she needs to be able to decide that for herself and not have to go out of state to get the health care or abortion that she needs, and then it's under attack.
I want to expand on that a little bit with respect to that. A bill recently proposed in the state Senate would allow anyone who becomes pregnant to file a civil suit against the person who impregnated them, the father of that baby, even if it happened as a result of consensual sex. Now, Senator Tina Maharanth, I believe is how you pronounce it, she framed that as a matter of equity in the wake of a proposed state ban on abortion. Would you support that idea? Could you go that far, Melissa?
I think so, yeah. Okay.
And Claire?
Yeah, and I think we'll see a lot more of these kind of things if people are forced to utilize their body to carry the life, then it falls onto the responsibility of so many others. We have to ask ourselves then if these heartbeat bills and even the conception bills go into place, when does child support start? Is it 50-50 of those medical bills? Can you get life insurance? And so I think those are valid questions to have in this current state where we're living in a post-Roe society with all of these states, including Ohio, making these laws. We have to have further conversations. And, you know, it takes two people to get pregnant. And if somebody gets pregnant unintentionally, they probably do have a right, because the other person had just as many choices to not engage or to have protection as well.
Expanding on, again, this overarching theme of some of the hot-button issues that have been discussed in the state legislature, last month a bill aimed at regulating school curriculums to keep out what some see as divisive concepts was introduced in the legislature. Proponents of that bill cited concepts such as critical race theory, so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion learning outcomes, discussion of gender in elementary schools, and so on. I would assume that both of you are opposed to that measure, but how would you go about trying to convince your constituents that this measure is ill-conceived? And for this one, we'll start with Claire.
So I think as somebody who has sat through my master's program, I went to Baylor in Waco, Texas, which is a faith-based institution. So we had an ethical integration of faith as one of our competencies. So 1 week we'd be reading 12 principles of Catholic community development, and the next week we'd be reading critical race theory, right? And I still didn't even have an entire class on critical race theory. It was just a snippet. So I think first understanding what critical race theory is, understanding that diversity inclusion trainings isn't just about race. That is about income as well as other socioeconomic factors. And so I understand the fear. I think it can be really scary to raise children when you don't know what they're learning. But I think we can all have patience with one another to have these conversations in a way where we don't have to ban things in the classroom, but we can have conversations in a way to help each person kind of understand that just because critical race theory exists doesn't mean that you, a white person, has failed society and is a burden, but it is a theory, a framework, and mostly to understand that it is not taught in our elementary and even our high school classes. I didn't even get to do the surface of it in my master's program. I would have had to probably take a specific program surrounding that. So I think it's just an understanding. These issues definitely subtract and distract from the real needs of our community.
And Melissa?
Critical race theory is not taught in Ohio public schools. However, I do think it deserves the opposition that it has received. CRT is offered a college course to understand the way race, society, and law affects our country's individual. The truth is that CRT is not taught in preschool, elementary school, middle school, or high school. What is taught in schools are nation's history, which tends to touch on race. However, that is not CRT. And I support teaching our children the history of cultures and race within the U.S. and around the world. and I would never support the bills like House Bill 327, and I hope I would get a place where bills like House Bill 327 would never be presented.
Melissa, you spoke a little bit earlier about school funding as a priority. Does that extend to a level of, I guess for lack of a better term, school autonomy in terms of determining curriculum and so on? Because this kind of touches on that.
School autonomy?
The ability of schools, again, when we talk about this bill, the ability of schools to determine their own curriculum without interference from the state legislature.
I would support that.
And Claire?
I think that we would still need to have guidelines, right? Because if we give some of those smallest rural schools the complete autonomy to set their curriculum, they're going to probably leave, or possibly, not probably, I don't want to assume, but they might leave things out that is going to be necessary, say, if somebody is going to college, and now they're missing gaps in their education. I know, as a millennial, a lot of us found out about the Tulsa massacre, but from a TV show. It was never taught in our schools, and instantly we were like, oh my gosh, where was this taught? And so I never want us to be raising students who grow up to feel like we kept things from them. So I want each community to have as much autonomy possible to set curriculums and set pace, but also making sure that we're doing so in a way that is not harmful to our students.
So when we talk about this bill as that would provide certain guidelines for teaching some of these issues, it's not so much the providing guidelines part, it's the these issues part that
yes.
you have a problem with.
Yeah, it's these guidelines.
Would that be fair to say,
yeah.
Melissa? Okay. A couple of other quick questions. We're going to get to a break here in the midway point of our forum. Again, regarding some of the hot-button issues that we mentioned earlier, and again, as it relates to schools, in the wake of recent gun violence in schools, the state has made it easier to have certain staff be armed in Ohio schools. Is this an effective response to the question of school security, and what else or what more should be done at the state level to make Ohio schools safer? And Melissa, we'll start with you.
Teachers should not have to be armed. They need to be, they're already teaching two or three classes, so they need to be able to do their jobs and be, have raises and do their jobs. The staffing or the needs to be with security.
So the second part of that question, what else then should be done? Because I think everyone agrees that schools in Ohio need to be as safe as possible. What, if anything, should be done instead of or in addition to?
They need to add more security. And like Finley City School has the boot on their doors.
And Claire?
Yes. So my mom is a school teacher. She teaches sixth grade science. And she is the first Gulf War. She's from the first Gulf War. So she served in the Air Force. She was stationed in Italy and South Korea for a time. And so my mom has been trained with weapons, and my mom is a school teacher, and even she would not want to have a gun in school, because what if she accidentally killed a student? What if she killed the student who was the shooter, but it was still her student? Those kind of things don't belong in our school system. I think we're grappling for solutions, and I think it sounds like such a great idea, arm all the teachers, that will be the solution. But that doesn't – people tend to clam up in those situations. So even a well-intended armed teacher with minimal training may still not grab the gun and then have to live with the guilt that they had the gun and didn't do anything. So I don't think it's going to be a helpful response. I think for some schools it's going to be downright dangerous just to have them in the classroom. I think – I know it's such a hard topic, especially for Democrats. You know, everybody wants to think we're taking their guns. I, as a formerly incarcerated person, can't have a gun. I can't even have mace, so there's nothing I'm allowed to have. But I feel that if we can just do a 72-hour waiting period to take your gun home, especially maybe if you're under the age of, you know, 40, right? Or maybe if it's your first gun, you have to wait. If we can have universal background checks. I know that's uncomfortable for some, but even just having those conversations of what we would tolerate. Lastly, I really think we need to close those loopholes where you can buy the guns, because it's a crime for me to have a gun, but it is not a crime for somebody to sell me.
You actually kind of jumped ahead a little bit to the broader discussion about guns that I do want to close this first half of the forum with. Ohio recently became the 23rd mm-hmm. state to allow citizens to carry a concealed handgun without a permit over the objection of many in the law enforcement community. This as the number of incidents of gun violence are on the rise both across the country and as we have seen here at home. Would you work to amend or reverse that policy?
I would. But one of the things that I did not like about the concealed carry license beforehand was that it cost money. If the Second Amendment is a right, it should not cost you money to have that right. So while I think you should have to take the class and have a concealed carry license, I think we need to ensure that it is not costing our communities, because that is a lot of times a complaint. And if it's costing money to get this license, then it's only a right for those who can afford it. But most of the states who have passed these laws have had increases of gun incidences, increases of suicides, increases of violence, specifically domestic violence cases as well. So our police said that it was not helpful, and it's only been a couple, maybe a month, and we've had how many standoffs here in our community. It does not make us safer, and I think if we have real honest conversations of what can work for those who like guns, like to use guns safely and responsibly with the need for public safety, if we actually have a real conversation where it's not take your guns or guns everywhere, if we can have that conversation, I think we'll get somewhere in this debate.
Melissa?
I would amend it. We need the red flag laws. We need the education to, you know, certify. It shouldn't cost money. I agree with Sarah on that one. And all these school shootings in our communities, or, you know, so I would agree with Sarah on that one.
You're listening to the WFIN Candidate Forum featuring two candidates running for the Democratic nomination in the 83rd District of the Ohio House of Representatives, Melissa Kritzel and Claire Osborne. We will continue with today's forum after this brief break on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Your news authority is 1330 WFIN and now at 95.5 FM.
I found hope in the midst of an overwhelming situation.
I let go of trying to control things that I had no control over, and that helped me find peace of mind.
Alcoholism is a disease that can affect any family. Everyone suffers, but there is help and hope at Al-Anon Family Groups.
I was constantly stressed and worried. Now I approach each day with joy and gratitude.
In Al-Anon, families and friends of alcoholics find new ways to heal from the effects of a loved one's drinking.
Al-Anon gave me my life back. I'm a better father and husband.
Are you in an overwhelming situation because of someone else's drinking?
Al-Anon and Al-Anon can help.
Local and virtual meetings are available. Maybe one could work for you. For information, call 1-866-200-0033 or visit al-anon.org/hope.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
Take WFIN wherever you go with our updated mobile apps for iPhone and Android. And now you can listen to us on your Alexa device. Get the app at WFIN.com or in the App Store or Google Play. Plus, enable Alexa by searching for WFIN under Skills, and you'll soon be saying, Alexa, play 1330 WFIN. And the best part is the apps and skills are absolutely free. On the air at 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM. Online at WFIN.com and on your smartphone, tablet, and Alexa devices.
It's today's first look at the top stories every weekday morning. Hi, this is Gordon Deal, inviting you to join me for This Morning, America's First News. We get down to business weekday mornings at 5 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and now at 95.5 FM.
Your news authority is 1330 WFIN, and now at 95.5 FM.
Welcome back to today's WFIN Candidate Forum, featuring the two candidates running for the Democratic nomination in the 83rd District of the Ohio House of Representatives. I'm Chris Oakes. I'm joined by our candidates Melissa Kritzel and Claire Osborne. Before we get into the next section of the debate, again, before the break, we were talking about a number of hot-button, divisive issues that have been brought up in the past term in the state legislature, and I want to just make sure that we haven't gone over anything or glossed over anything that you wanted to expand on. Either one of you have any further points on any of the things that we've talked about with respect to that? We good? All right, very good. I'll ask you again before we conclude if there's anything that we've neglected to bring up and points that you want to discuss, but I want to move on. In the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic, state politicians have advanced an effort that would make Ohio the only state in the nation with an explicit ban of vaccine mandates in its constitution. The Ohio House last year passed legislation that would ban most vaccine mandates. The state Senate has yet to take up this proposal, but how far-reaching should the state legislature go with respect to mandating or prohibiting a mandate for health-related measures such as vaccine requirements, business closures like we saw during the pandemic, and the like? This was a very controversial issue over the past couple of years, and I want to get your thoughts, and Melissa, we'll start with you.
I've actually lost both my brothers to COVID because they weren't vaccinated, so we need those mandates and wear a mask. So I'm... personally would go for the mandating again if we need to, because we're on the rise again.
And I would assume that you would extend that for another, I don't want to say pandemic, this was probably a once-in-a-lifetime event, but there are other outbreaks of disease, communicable disease, that may not rise to the level of pandemic. I guess part of the question that I'm getting at is to what extent should the legislature, should the state go in order to prevent those outbreaks at levels below the pandemic level, I guess, for lack of a better term?
As far as we need to go to protect the public and their health.
Claire, same question to you.
Yeah, so I think when it comes to vaccine mandates, I think public institutions like schools, for example, I think they have a right to mandate if you go to school that you have this vaccine, right? I know tons of people who had to stay in college dorms who had to get vaccines to be able to go to those college dorms, vaccines to start school. And I think a COVID-19 vaccine is no different there. I think they're moving forward, then, the governmental jobs, federal government jobs, the state of Ohio jobs, they have a right to mandate vaccines. And I think individual employers do as well. When I go to work, under the impression that I'm not putting myself in any undue danger, which means that my employer has a right to protect me from diseases such as COVID-19. I think when it came down to the shutdowns and all of that, I think it was well-intentioned but handled messily. I think there was definitely a discrepancy between what businesses got shut down and what did not. A lot of times the big stores like Walmart were shut down, but small community markets were closed. So I think that made things really messy. When we have big crises like this that threaten our healthcare system, we need a large response to get it under control. But we also need a lot more transparency about what that looks like, a lot more honesty about what it looks like in our communities. You know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime event, but as a millennial, I've lived through quite a few of those. So I have no doubt that we will be facing something probably worse than COVID, probably within the next 10 years. And we need to ensure that we have a full-scale force. I often look at young people in the community who could have really been of value during that time.
The 83rd House District comprises more than just Hancock County. Obviously, our audience would be most concerned with those issues affecting Hancock County, prime example being the $30 million in funding for the Blanchard River flood mitigation work. But I would also point to the $500,000 that Representative Cross also secured for cleanup work at Indian Lake in Logan County, which is also part of the district which you hope to represent. So I use that as an example to ask this question. How familiar are you with those issues elsewhere in the district, and how will you work to better familiarize yourself with those issues? And for this one, we'll start with Claire.
Yeah, so I'm a little familiar with the Indian Lake issue. We are actually, my team is working on getting together with some professors at local colleges and things like that to really understand the dangers presented, and especially the long-term solution where the goal would be to dredge that lake 3 feet through the whole thing. I think it would take 10 years is what would be $125 million, which is just a lot of money to fix that lake. But I think to become familiar with these issues, it would be reaching out, talking right to the community. Hancock County, I would say I'm pretty familiar with, but every day I find out a new business, a new resource, a new something out there. You just never know what you don't know. And so reaching out and communicating with people is going to be that key to those kind of communications. However, I also think that when we talk about issues like Indian Lake and the flood basin, I like to follow the science personally as somebody who went to college, and a lot of the work that I do is evidence-based work. Evidence-based work gets funded. However, we can't pick and choose what evidence-based work we succumb to. If the scientists are right about Indian Lake, then the scientists are probably right about other things. So I think making sure that we are consistent in how we show up for the issues in our community is going to be important. Maybe the science will show something that I don't like about an issue, something against my own personal moral compass. But unfortunately, the science doesn't care about my opinions. The science just is science. So that's how I would lead in the community, and that's how I would go about helping to solve these issues is fact-based, science-based, and including the voices of the people.
Melissa, same question to you with respect to how familiar are you with those issues elsewhere in the district, and how will you work to better familiarize yourself with those
I've
issues?
I've actually been going to Logan County and Hardin County and meeting with the constituents and their concerns with the lake and having, you know, flooding issues or cleaning the lake.
What have you learned in those conversations?
They're very concerned, and you know, they would like it dredged and cleaned out. And now algae is a huge problem.
The capital budget, we talked a little bit about the upcoming biennium budget. The capital budget that secured those funds for flood mitigation and for Indian Lake cleanup also included hundreds of millions of dollars in tax incentives to Intel as part of the effort to secure their multi-billion dollar investment in the state that will create literally thousands of jobs. That has long been a sticking point, however, of economic development and a controversial one. To what extent is it appropriate to offer tax breaks and similar types of incentives to secure corporate investments that are so obviously good for Ohio and for Ohioans? And Melissa, we'll start with you.
Some incentives are helpful, but others are not. And it doesn't. Jobs are very helpful, and we need those jobs. But the tax incentives, I don't think is necessarily helpful.
Let me expand on that a bit, then. How would you go about determining, if you were to hold this seat, then how would you go about determining what are and are not the proper incentives for a given proposed project, something of that nature?
It depends on their incentives, whether they provide unions or whether they provide living wages, contracts, things of that nature.
And Claire?
Yeah, so it is always a hot debate. I am one who, you know, I want to help the people first, but some of these big jobs really do bring a lot to the community. I think one of the things Ohio should be working on for the next 10 years is really building a robust community that sets ourselves out. I personally love public rail. I want trains in every corner of the state of Ohio. And I think things like that will help us not have to give so much into incentives in the future. If we have the best infrastructure in the nation, then we don't have to sell out so much and much for tax incentives, because they're going to want to be where the other things are. If we have the best people, the best resources, the best training, that will help us not have to give billions of dollars in these tax incentives, because there are other things that are going to bring people to us. I think we're losing out a lot of people, especially young people, to states like Colorado, Michigan, states that have a lot of things that we simply don't have, from various LGBTQ plus protections to better housing markets, better wages. I know, as somebody who has used public transportation that works really well, when you are on public transportation that works really well, you instantly enjoy it. And I think if we can give the people of Ohio more choices in how they live, work, and thrive in Ohio, business will see that this is the place to be.
Building on some of what you were talking about there, you mentioned rail. For a lot of folks in the state, that is a very out-of-the-box idea. That is something that I don't know has been on a whole lot of people's radar. So I'll ask you, and I'll start with Melissa here. What other out-of-the-box ideas, are there any other out-of-the-box ideas that you would like to see the legislature at least discuss and bring up that you could bring to the table?
Another out-of-the-box idea would be to make sure there's plenty of funding for Social Security and disability. There's lack of funding for it, and they need to be taken care of.
Claire?
So when we talked about COVID-19, I mentioned young people before my time ran out, and I would love to see us have a robust infrastructure of I think it's Job Corps. And I would love to see us invest in that. So when the next pandemic hits, we have young people who can go out, make sure that the elderly have food, make sure that people who are stuck in their homes have things. So like a first response to these sort of things. I would love to see it for mental health as well. We have a lot of people in our community who are struggling with mental health, and we have a lot of young people who may be in college and they're looking for something to do that they can build their skills, and having them be able to go and pair. So I really think that would be a lot of fun. You can get young people from the city coming to the rural. We can get people in the rural communities going to the city, and you can get young people to see all that's great in Ohio while also responding to some of our biggest needs in Ohio.
That actually piggybacks onto another point that you had brought up earlier that I want to explore a little bit, and that being the brain drain in Ohio, young people leaving the state. In fact, Representative Cross was one that one of several in the state legislature working to address that through a series of incentives for young people to study and stay in Ohio, things like tax exemptions for, I think, 3 years under that that plan and so on. Is that something that you can support? Is it something that you could come up with a better alternative, expand? Your thoughts.
So I always appreciate trying. That's, you know, it's a great idea to start with. I have never met a young person who said, I need to leave Ohio because of the state tax. I honestly have been a person who I don't think about my taxes that often. I pay them and we move on. I don't think being able to not pay the state tax for a couple years would have kept any of my friends here. They leave because of so many other things. And I think when we start really understanding what those things are, then we can move forward. Some will probably always lose because there's states with better weather. We can't control the weather, unfortunately. But again, I truly believe that public rail would and public transportation would help, because my family, at least, would be able to probably go down to one car if we had actual public transportation, which would save me quite a bit of money each month by not having to pay. So giving young people those choices and how their communities function for them. I know other cities are doing a great job with making sure that their downtowns are fun, engaging, good for families, but also good for adults who just want to have fun down there. We do it with Adora here in Findlay as well. So those kind of things. Ohio tends to have a decent housing market, which I think helps keep some people here. But if we don't have these things in our communities that actually make them want to stay, they're going to continue to leave.
Melissa, when we were talking about the incentives to keep Ohio's young people here, studying here and living here, and the proposals that Representative Cross has brought up, I saw you kind of shaking your head. Give us your thoughts on those.
We need to be able, the kids or the young adults to stay here if they had the jobs that actually paid well, living wages. And pretty much they wouldn't leave the state of Ohio, and they're not really leaving the state of Ohio.
So in your mind, that is the issue of living wages jobs and living wages? Your thoughts, Claire?
I think it's a mix. I think we don't have enough of a lot of those art jobs, a lot of those creating jobs. That so many young people drift to. But I also think a lot of them go to Colorado, Michigan, states that have legalized marijuana. I've had friends who have left because they're afraid of the LGBTQ laws that are happening here in Ohio. So they leave because they're afraid if they have a gay child. So they go to states that might be safer there. I also think a lot we lose to the weather. So it's a mix of so many different issues. And I think one solution's not going to keep all of our young people here. But we need to make sure that Ohio is a safe state to live, raise a family, work, and have fun. We have some fantastic scenery in the state of Ohio. We have some wonderful things to do. But I'm not going to sit in a car for 2 hours to get there. I don't have time either because I'm working too much. And so where the economy does come into play, we need to ensure that our young people have access to work-life balance. You shouldn't have to work 60, 70 hours in the state of Ohio because then you don't get to enjoy the state of Ohio.
real quickly, and I think we'll probably make this the last question, with respect to young people and issues facing young people, college affordability is obviously a nationwide issue. But as it relates to Ohio, what can be done to improve the ability of Ohio students and Ohio young people to further their education and get those good jobs, those good desirable jobs that we want to keep in Ohio with respect to education? And Melissa, we'll start with you.
If I'm elected, I would try to make college free, 2-year college free, so that they can go, make it more affordable. And grants.
And Claire?
Yeah, so I would really love to see, when we talk about the 2-year degrees, a lot of those can be completed while you're still in high school. A lot of our high school students can actually graduate high school with an associate's degree. However, through conversations with my mom, and she would probably absolutely be disappointed if I didn't mention it, for every student that is enrolled in those college classes in the high school, the high schools and our local schools lose money because they're paying those colleges. So looking at that to make sure that not only can our students receive these college classes while in high school, but it's also not taking away from our public schools either. And I think that while free college is all fun and good and an ultimate goal, I think, that we'll see sometime down the road, not probably in the next 5 years, but one day, I'm hopeful. But I think we can incentivize young people who stay in the state. You know, teachers, for example, we're losing them so fast, and it's because you pay $60,000 for the degree and then you make $32,000 when you get out. That's not a good decision. However, maybe there's something that we could do where if you work as a public school teacher for so long, maybe your student loans are forgiven. Maybe you don't have to pay your student loans while you're doing that. I know there's other careers, of course, that also have similar discrepancies where the cost of the college degree does not equate. So looking at those kind of things and also making sure that we're providing a lot of non-college training. I know I had an electrician, I think, to my house not too long ago, and he was talking about how just old the population of electricians and plumbers are because we don't have young people entering that field. Thank you.
We will actually move on at this point because our time is running a little bit short. We will move on to closing statements, and we'll give you an opportunity to sort of encapsulate your campaigns, and for that, we'll start with you, Claire.
Yes. So I really am just so passionate about this community. I love living and working in Hancock County. I love everything about the 83rd. I truly hope to have the people who are listening here support on August 2nd because I will put passion into everything that I do. I live life on purpose with purpose, and my purpose is to make our community a place where all of us can belong and thrive. I truly believe in the goodness of each other, and I think that together we can solve some of these hot-button issues and have real, honest conversations where it doesn't have to be an all-or-nothing fight at the end of the day. So if anybody would like to find out any more information about our campaign, get involved, reach out, it's claireforohio.com.
Melissa?
I plan on bringing the much-needed representation to the 83rd District of Ohio. Our Democratic voice has been dismissed for far too long. Ohioans are struggling because of the cost of living, and more times than not, it's because our Ohio's policies or lack thereof. From supporting legislation to protecting women's health care and our LGBTQ+ community to making sure that our district is providing the right resources for mental health and addiction, I'm your candidate. Please support my campaign at mkritzelforohiostaterep.org. And hope I have your vote on August 2nd.
Thank you both for being here. Thank you for joining us tonight. Thanks to our candidates for taking part in today's forum. A reminder that early voting is now underway in Ohio. Absentee ballots are available, and Election Day itself is Tuesday, August 2nd. A quick reminder, once again, on a separate topic, before we close out the program, we mentioned it at the start of the forum, the Riverside Civic Concert Series at Riverside Park tonight has been canceled because of the extreme heat. More information on that at our webpage. Again, thanks to both of our candidates for taking part in this evening's forum. I'm Chris Oakes for WFIN.
Thanks for joining us for tonight's political forum. The preceding has been a special presentation of your news authority, 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and now at 95.5 FM.